Here comes Hachi, Scotty Braun, along with Baseball America's J.J. Cooper and Jeff Ponce. Jacob Rudner is going to join us in a little bit. We have juicy topics today, guys, so we are going to get right into it, and we'll let Roadrunner take it away with our first move. So we've seen many prospects enter the show this year, as we do especially in the last few years, Jeff, and make an impact. Andrew Painter was a name that many had on their list to be doing big things in the major leagues at this point for the Phillies. I'll make my little reference here. The Mets have three dudes that just came up in the last month that are contributing and could be pitching in the playoffs for them, go to their rival in the division. And what's up with Painter since he's come back from surgery?
Yeah, I think, you know, the expectations were pretty high. Just all things considered, this was a guy that prior to his injury, almost days prior to his injury, it seemed like he was really trending to, you know, potentially break camp with the Phillies to begin 2023. Obviously, he has the initial injury. He's then shut down. They have the surgery a little later, so that kind of delayed the window. Came back in AFL last year, kind of seemed like he was going to have a full healthy offseason. But, you know, I think the most concerning thing is anybody coming back from Tommy John surgery and that lengthy of a shutdown without competitive games, there's going to be command stuff that maybe doesn't come back or takes a little while to come back. He's never really turned that corner, particularly with the fastball command. And some of the traits and attributes on the four-seam fastball have really ticked down this year. One in particular that I could call out would be ride. You know, the ride on the fastball was down significantly. And there's always some translations from AAA, where they're using the major league balls versus AA and low A and high A numbers. But at the same time, it's such a difference in about 3 to 4 inches that there's something awry here as well, and you have to wonder if that shape will ever really return.
And yeah, if I could just kind of add to that, it's been like you look at it statistically, obviously this is a bad year. There's no other way to put it. AAA is obviously more offensively inflated than the rest of the minors, but at the same time, when you see one of the best pitching prospects in baseball have an ERA above 5, yes, FIP's a little bit lower than that, but still high, a lot of home runs, a lot of hits allowed, not a whole lot of strikeouts. And, you know, you just look at it overall. But then the question becomes, and this is where I think this is where pitching prospects, especially high school pitching prospects, you know, it was a prep draft, you know, a couple of years ago, where they're challenging because you could say, okay, that this is a sign that he's on the Forrest Whitley track, where you had this elite pitching prospect, got injured, and he never brought it, never got it back, or at least hasn't yet in Forrest Whitley's case. I'm still the one who maybe doesn't give up hope long term with him in the Rays. But you've got that, or you have that this is kind of that step, that setback that sets him up for next year. And you say, well, okay, what are examples of that? And like, look back at what Mackenzie Gore did a few years ago, and then he figured it out. Look at the struggles that Hunter Green had at some points in the minors. There's a long history of, Roy Halladay would be probably the extreme example of this, you know, the best case scenario. There are a long history of high school drafty pitchers, you know, elite pitching prospects that kind of go through a step back. You've kind of dove into it, Jeff, and kind of looked at the full pitch mix here. And there are some things to like about this, and then there are some things that seem like they're also concerns.
Yeah, I think, you know, to kind of keep it succinct, the biggest concern is the fastball shape and the lack of fastball command. I always talk about this. You sort of got to have movement, you got to have velocity, and you got to have release characteristics or deception to really have a good fastball. He's not getting whiffs. He doesn't get a lot of chases. He's not stealing a lot of strikes, which I think is one of the things that can kind of make up for the lack of movement or release characteristics. It's kind of just empty velo. He's a right-hander that's only going to go so far. So I think the lack of command and the lack of movement really is just a bad combination. He's got to figure out ways around that. I think the good side of it is Andrew Painter still has stuff. He still has the ability to move the baseball a bunch of different directions. He throws pretty hard. He's physical. There's pitchability characteristics that are still really, really good with him. He'll work to both sides of the plate. he has great feel for about three different breaking ball shapes and like a gyro-ish kind of a slider, a more traditional sort of cutter, and a sweeper. He'll mix in a curveball as well that frankly probably gets used a little bit too much. But he has a variety of different shapes. He can throw all of those for strikes. Some of them are plus pitches or at least above average. And I think that's kind of where he needs to lean, is going into a variety of shapes and having game plans that are based upon, you know, the weaknesses and the strengths of the hitter. He kind of can't just go up there and just challenge guys like he's Tarik Skubal or somebody, because he doesn't have that level of stuff, that level of fastball quality either.
Okay. I want to kind of dive in that a little bit more. You and I have had this conversation leading into this, and you made the point about how he kind of added that cutter that is really kind of a pretty promising pitch. I do feel like this is kind of an example, though, of where this is why we love kind of following prospects and all, because these aren't easy questions and easy answers. This isn't black and white. If someone said to me, you know, is Randrew Painter going to fix this or not? The answer is it's probabilities, not certainties. It's not 100% he will or 100% he won't. It's there's a 60% chance he will and a 40% chance he won't or something like that. But like when you talk about the cut fastball and versus his four seamer, you look at that four seamer, and like you said, it doesn't have the ride. It doesn't have the same ability to miss bats it did pre-injury. Well, this offseason, then the question becomes, okay, was that the first year back, or is that gone forever? Or is that gone maybe because in part because he's developed a cutter, and sometimes you kind of can lose a little bit of fastball characteristics as you're kind of master the other pitch. And then you figure out, okay, do I go down the cutter route, or do I try to regain the four seamer that to what I had before the injury? I don't think, Jeff, that there's an easy answer to that right now, is there?
No. And I think, you know, his cutter is such that it's like the high end of still being a breaking ball cutter before it kind of hits that line of becoming like a four seam cutter. If he could throw that pitch a little bit harder with a little bit more ride, it wouldn't be a bad pathway to sort of supplement that four seam fastball. It's not all that different from what Corbin Burns sort of eventually figured out, was that, you know, throwing that cutter as hard as possible, sitting mid 90s with it, you know, made for a much better fastball shape that all of his other pitches sort of played off of. He has the same ability to spin the ball and you know, sort of, you know, make it sweep, make it slide, make it cut, you know, it can drop. He has a pretty good changeup as well. I think the fact that he has all these this ability to change all these different shapes, he's sort of got to use that and use the fact that he commands a lot of his breaking balls a lot better than he does his fastballs. I think maybe there's some direction that he goes with more of like a four seam ride cutter sort of shape on the fastball. It just sort of depends where, you know, the ride gets to plus the velocity on a pitch like that. So he's certainly shown command for the cutter that he has, and I think that's allowed him to have some decent results despite really struggling in AAA this year.
If you follow the windy road of a rotation, really for any team, the story with the Phillies, of course, was, wow, I mean, this is one of the better staffs in baseball. They're fine. It's okay. Painter's not going to happen this year. All good. Then Zach Wheeler goes down. And then now they've signed Walker Buehler, who's going to appear in a game for a few days. So that's why this is a fun book to follow, and it's called A Major League Baseball Season with One Team, and that's the Phillies. But anyway, some good stuff there on Andrew Painter. Let's get to another team in the division coming up next. We'll talk Marlins prospects on the rise on Baseball America Hot Sheet.
We spend a lot of time on the road. We are often concerned about our online security when you're logging in from all over the globe, really. So you should maybe look into a VPN. What does that stand for, Kratz?
Virtual private network.
Boom. Nailed it. And that virtual private network that you should look into is called Surfshark. It is time to take control of your online security and try Surfshark today. You can enjoy their 30-day money-back guarantee and secure your digital world right now by visiting the link that we'll post there for you and start surfing securely. Surfshark.com/foul or the code foul at checkout will get you 4 extra months of Surfshark VPN, aka virtual private network. It's a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. Surfshark's unique VPN benefits include use on unlimited devices in 100 countries and 24/7 support at surfshark.com/foul. This has been your tech update. Keep your data safe.
Helium Spot. Let's talk about the Marlins. This is a team in their usual rebuild action, and we've got three of us now to chat with. On my side, of course, J.J. Cooper, Jeff Ponce, and now Jacob Rudner joining us for the rest of the show as well. J.J., I'll let you run point on this one and tell us about what's happening with the Marlins system. And the general question that Marlins fans want to know is, are we going to be like the Rays eventually? Because that's what Peter Bendix was brought in to do.
So I give a little insight here to how this works a lot of times. Like, we're figuring out, what are we going to talk about today? And a lot of times you're getting sneak peeks of stories that we're working on at baseballamerica.com that aren't even sometimes fully fleshed out yet. Jeff's been talking to me about Andrew Painter because he's working and diving deep on top 100 prospects. But another one we're working on is this kind of what organizations, prospects are kind of trending in an improving direction. And we kind of came to this because, Jacob, as I look at the Marlins right now, I would say that no organization probably has had a bigger step forward over the last, let's call it 16, 17 months than the Marlins. It doesn't mean that they're our number one farm system in baseball or anything like that, but the pitching that they have in this organization right now, the kind of a few breakthroughs that they've had at the big league level, but also on the position player prospect side, on the minor league level, this is an organization that does seem like, you look at what Peter Bendix and their group is doing, I'm seeing some signs of life here. I'm seeing some signs of hope in an organization that hasn't had a whole lot of those in recent years, I would say.
Well, that's certainly the case. And I think that Robbie Snelling is kind of the perfect face of that development for the organization. You look at what Robbie Snelling did last year in 2024, it was a discouraging season. The fastball quality was down. He got hit around a pretty good bit. Now this season, he's one of the best pitching prospects in the minor leagues. His fastball has changed dramatically. He's throwing it 3 miles per hour harder on average. In AAA so far this year, he has a 34% miss rate on fastballs. Last year across three levels, he had a 25% miss rate with that pitch. He's throwing his curveball more than he ever has before. And as we've seen with Peter Bendix led front offices, they have a knack for being able to bring out the best of some of these guys. And they're able to use tools to their advantage to improve pitchers. Robbie Snelling has done an excellent job of that. Thomas White is another guy who's in AAA, who's having an outstanding season. Maybe not the same revitalization as a guy like Robbie Snelling, but certainly impressive. He was interesting, to say the least, in his AAA debut. Walked six guys, but struck out 10. And he was able to do the things that Snelling has done, which is miss a lot of bats. He's able to beat a lot of hitters that are advanced at the highest level of the minor leagues. And the progress that these guys are making is notable. We've seen a lot of improvement across the board. It's not just limited to those two guys, even if they are the most obvious cases of, hey, this is a farm system that's on the rise and they have some pitchers doing some outstanding things. Hiring the right people fast keeps your team moving forward without losing momentum. Every day a position stays open is a day you're missing productivity, creativity, and growth. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed Sponsored Jobs helps you stand out and hire fast. With Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, Sponsored Jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. One thing I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring so fast because it allows you to rapidly sort through candidates based on your preferences. Plus, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica. Just go to Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed is all you need.
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at another name on this list as well, in addition to Snelling, it's Thomas White, which I think when you start to look at all the really, you know, high-performing pitching prospects that were ranked highly that are already in the big leagues, I think there's a case to be made that Thomas White right now is probably the best left-hander in the minors now that Peyton Tolley is up, and could potentially be the best pitching prospect that still remains in the minor leagues. I think, you know, number one with White is he's not even sort of fully baked yet. You sort of look at the command, the operation. It's not always super crisp from throw to throw. And I think some of that stuff is going to come. But despite that, you know, left-handed power, the types of shapes that he has, you know, he has enough sort of release characteristics because it's a lower arm slot. He hides the ball really well. And there's just consistency of power and movement. He's not going to blow you away with like IVB numbers. It's not the hardest throwing lefty in the minors, but he's one of the hardest throwing left-handed starters in the minor leagues. Has, you know, two developed breaking ball shapes now with the sweeper, and now that he's added like more of a like straight up gyro sort of fastball, slider, and then is, you know, mixing in the changeup as well. And that's always sort of been, even throughout different, and I don't know how many of these people have changed over, but it seems like even throughout different regimes, the changeup always seems to be a calling card of Marlins pitching prospects. And I think you've seen development with that pitch, both with Snelling and with White this year.
Now, that's what's happening at the upper levels. The other thing that does stand out with the Marlins is we just posted, Josh Norris went down the Dominican, talked to a whole lot of scouts who scouted the Dominican Summer League. We have our top 35 Dominican Summer League prospects, and three Marlins pitchers are on that list, led by Kevin DeFrank, who's number three overall on our top 35 there. And you may go, okay, three. Okay, that's nice. You got to remember, there are 52 teams in the DSL. So for one organization, again, all 30 organizations are represented. Obviously, some cases have more than one team, but no one had a more depth of pitching in the DSL. Now, those are pitchers who are far away. Don't, you know, think, oh, okay, we're going to see Kevin DeFrank or Kilfrady and Encarnacion or any of these guys in a, you know, next year or anything like that. But no one had more pitchers, more intriguing arms. And that doesn't count like a Luis Cova, who was a very intriguing hitting prospect for them in the DSL as well. It's an organization that just has a lot more arms. The other thing I would just say about it, though, is we saw at the trade deadline last year that what the Marlins kind of, they took advantage of the fact that what do you get the person needs anything? You know, you get them almost anything, it'll work. The Marlins didn't say we're going to drill down on this one prospect. They looked at it and said they were going to go with the quantity approach. They were going to take, hey, if you say that you're more willing to trade this player than this player, and we think that they're equivalent, we'll take the first baseman or the outfield or whatever. And see like what they got from Jacob Marcy this year and other guys like that. This is an organization that still got a long ways to go, but it definitely is taking strides towards kind of having a cohesive plan, I would say.
And even this year, I mean, it's not been a dream season, but they've outperformed expectations. We'll see if that continues. Good prospect talk there. Let's get to the college hot topic next. We'll say bye to Jeff. Jeff, thank you. Good to see you. We'll probably see you next week. And Jacob will take center stage. Tampering in college baseball. Dum, dum, dum. Coming up.
We are longtime fans of Omaha Steaks, and I am drooling looking at the website right now, featuring USDA certified tender steaks, and also during their Red Hot Sale event going on right now this fall, 50% off site-wide at omahasteaks.com, plus for the FT fam, an extra $35 off with promo code FOUL at checkout. You've been a big fan of Omaha Steaks since your early days as a pro.
Brings me back to my A-ball, low A-ball days, because we used to survive on this. We get a big order at the beginning of the year, cook them on our little electric grill, can of peas, some mac and cheese. That was dinner for four. We survived off Omaha Steaks. It still has a special place in my heart.
You thrived. Well, you guys ate like kings.
Yeah.
That's special. Get fired up for fall grilling with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Red Hot Sale event. And for an extra $35 off, promo code FOUL at checkout. 50% off at omahasteaks.com and an extra $35 off with promo code FOUL at checkout. See site for details. Dig in.
Back to school, Scotty Braun, JJ Cooper, and Jacob Rudner. Jacob, you start here as it's a fascinating topic. It's juicy, and it's called tampering. We know about it from other sports. It is very active, it appears, in the college world these days. So give us a glimpse of what you wrote about.
Well, I think before we say anything, it's really important to define what we're talking about, because the way it was explained to me by the coaches who I had conversations with, there's two very clear types of tampering. On one hand, we have coaches who are reaching out to players, players' family members, coaches, trainers, summer ball coaches, whatever you want to call it, and they're initiating the process of that player entering the transfer portal. They're saying something to the effect of, we're going to pay you more, our situation is better than the one you're currently in, and you should get into the portal. That is across the board regarded as bad, poor practice, a violation of college athletic ethics, and a problem. On the other hand, and this was a big topic with Power Five coaches in particular, Tony Vitello talked about it on the record for us. There is a degree to tampering that is becoming unavoidable, and it is when there are agents or family members or other people in a player's camp who are reaching out to schools and effectively saying, my son, my player, you know, my prospect is going to be entering the transfer portal and is looking for a spot to play. And for these coaches who are receiving those phone calls, you kind of have to make a choice. Are you going to get on the phone and say, listen, I appreciate the call, but my ethics prevent me from being able to have a conversation with you? Or are you going to follow through and have the conversation and start to build your roster? There was not a single coach who I spoke with at the Power Five level who said that they would have hung up the phone or turned that agent away. They have to be able to have those types of conversations or you risk being left in the dust. So we have two types of tampering. One, I think, is a little bit more unavoidable than the other. One is viewed as kind of the greater evil. And the other is a situation that is a byproduct of a very broken system, and one that a lot of Power Five coaches and even some of the mid-major coaches who are the victims of this say, there's nothing we can do. There's the quote from Tony Vitello. If you're calling a kid who's not in the portal, that's breaking the rules. That's wrong. But when kids and families are already asking questions, it's hard or even impossible to pretend that conversation isn't happening. So that is the predicament. I thought Coach Vitello did a great job of explaining it right there. And that's what these coaches are dealing with right now. And until the NCAA decides to step in with some sort of solution, I don't think this is going anywhere anytime soon.
You just hit on the million-dollar question here, which is until, and you said that NCAA, and I don't even know if it will be the NCAA long-term that does this, but you have coaches saying that this is the problem. And let's just note, both of these technically in some ways, like if you're not in the transfer portal, you're not supposed to be talking to other teams. So both of them in some way, or at least, are violations. But even the first version, even the version that everyone largely decries and says it shouldn't happen, we know it's happening, right, Jacob? Like there are 100% times where teams are the ones, coaches are the ones who are reaching out first and kind of initiating the process, trying to help the player understand that, hey, we think you're going to be a great fit here. You can make more money, whatever it is, better scholarship, whatever it is. But even with those right now, we're not seeing any kind of fear of being caught, is the, I guess the best way I'd put it. Is there any fear that, oh, your school, your program's going to get hit with sanctions if you are caught, quote, tampering? And again, not the second part that you defined, but even the first way where they literally are being proactive and initiating the conversation.
We have seldom seen consequences for bad actors throughout the college baseball, or really actually, we can broaden this out. This is a college athletics discussion. There are no consequences for bad actors in the tampering space. You can, for the most part, get away with getting ahead of the process, reaching out to a kid or a family member or an agent, and initiating that player's transfer portal process. It happens all the time. It's not going anywhere so long as it's not punished, and that is a fact. That being said, though, I think it's important to recognize that there are a lot of mid-major coaches. Reggie Christensen from Sacramento State, who spoke with us for this story, is a great example. They understand what these high major coaches are going through, and some of them, Coach Christensen included, have said that they would do the exact same thing. We know that this is an unavoidable aspect of the game until some governing body, be it the NCAA or whatever comes down the line, if or when that dissolves, steps in and says, this is definitively illegal and we are going to have consequences if we catch you doing it. There is really no other way to prevent it. Coach Christensen said that when Wahiva Aloy was having a breakout freshman season in 2023, and granted, he went on to win the Golden Spikes, he knew that coaches from the SEC and ACC were contacting his camp and having conversations about, it's time to get this guy in the portal and bring him over to our roster. And he ends up going and playing for Arkansas. So we saw that that was the byproduct, and even Coach Christensen himself has said, we aren't going to be able to do anything about that, and I would do the exact same thing if the roles were reversed.
So with this, right, as you said, there aren't really consequences right now. Is there even like, because again, this is kind of part of the game now, and it's kind of a, you know, again, there are some benefits of it. Like if you are on a partial scholarship somewhere, you can absolutely get a full ride. If you are not making money as a player, you can make money as a player. There's, you mentioned Aloy, you know, which Sacramento State kind of was proud of the fact that they produced a first round pick / Golden Spikes winner, even if he went somewhere else first before he won those awards. Hey, Air Force should be very proud of Paul Skeens, even if Paul Skeens finished his career at LSU. Is this kind of just going to stay as it is, or are there kind of any talks of any kind of changes to try to fix this?
There are no talks of that. I mean, I think that there are a lot of talks about the problems that exist, but no real answers for solutions. Some coaches want to see contracts, and they've brought that up in conversations with us at Baseball America. They want players to be locked in for 2 years, and then maybe they become free agents who can transfer. Other coaches have just admitted that there's really no end in sight to this problem. So the answer in short is no. There are no conversations about fixing this right now. But the reality is, until there are sweeping changes with the governance of college sports at large, we're not going to see problems to this issue, and it's going to continue to persist pretty much as is.
There you go. It's a free-for-all. It's Wild West tampering time up until we get changes at some point, maybe. Yeah, I like the contract idea. I'm sure that's a whole nother hour discussion. We can do it at some point, especially in the offseason if you're into the topic. Then write to us, get to us on Baseball America's social media channels. That's it for us this week. Subscribe to the Baseball America site, of course, at baseballamerica.com. Get yourself a subscription. Get ready for a Player of the Year announcement, perhaps pretty soon. Yes, JJ, we can tease that. Okay. Coming soon. See you next week.